Welcome to a podcast of the Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
So as I was exiting my apartment this evening, I saw parked out in front a hybrid Escalade. Come to terms with that reality. What kind of people are buying a hybrid Escalade? Well, you see, I'm an environmentalist. And my husband's a douchebag. And this is how we compromise to keep our sham marriage alive. I don't know, man. I don't know how much people are willing to concede to save the planet. Like, recently there was a story about Sun Chips, right? Sun Chips had biodegradable bags. Amazing, right? Like, corporate responsibility, it shows that they want to save the planet. Fantastic. But then people started complaining that the bags were too noisy. So then they got rid of the biodegradable bags. Do you know what else makes a lot of noise? The end of the world. What the hell is wrong with everybody?
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on North Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago, in between Andy's Deli and Lido Banquets, and just a Kishka's throw away from the Polish capital of the Western Hemisphere, it's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast deep green gardening and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees. I'm sorry, I started laughing on Kishka. I'm like, what's that? You eat it? You don't sleep with it? Right.
I want to take this day and I want to freeze it. I mean, I don't want it to freeze. I want to encapsulate it. I want to save it. You know, it's one of those days you walk out the door and you're thinking, do I wear a jacket? Maybe not.
Yeah.
I don't know if I need it. Oh, it's really nice. It smells nice outside. And the days in Chicago have been like this now for like 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
I keep telling people, September, best month of the year in Chicago, and it's just, and now the trees are starting to turn color.
Mm-hmm.
The honey locusts, especially in the city, all yellow, getting all yellow, and you're getting some of the oranges and some of the ash trees, the ones that haven't been consumed by emerald ash borer. What other trees are dying?
The ones by your house that one time.
The trees that haven't been hacked to bits by the water department crews. Do you know they're still working?
Really?
On my block, they've been there 2 months.
Oh man!
And in the last few days, they haven't even been around. But the street's still ripped up. The trees are still. They haven't been pruned. There's still jagged edges on them. The city apologized to me, and then they disappeared.
Yeah. Like, hey, we're sorry about it.
Hey, we're sorry, but we'll get back to you in 2014. Okay, and maybe pave the street again and. Fix those trees, fix the, whatever. It's just you and me, buddy.
All right. No Sarah Botka today, huh?
No, Sarah's, she's taking her nephew to the zoo.
Oh, that's nice.
Except for people who hate zoos.
I'm one of those.
I really?
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of zoos.
You know what? I'm not a big fan of zoos either.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, and let's face it, the whole concept and the whole mission of zoos has changed in, I'd say the last 30 years. where it used to be when I was a kid, you went to the zoo. Hey, look at the animals. We caged them. Oh, good. We can get close. I know. And there's a lot of people like, look, it's a monkey. Oh, look, a lion. I'm going to jump in the cage and see if he mauls me. And now it's kind of preservation. It's like, I guess we killed off all of them, the rest of them on the planet. It's a good thing we got one in Cleveland.
Yeah.
We got one of those. Yeah, one of those. I think there's two left. There's one in Cleveland and one in St. Louis.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what zoos are now.
I see. So you're saying let these animals go, let them breed, and let them.
But they can't. We can't let them go. We've taken away all of their ranges. You know, we've taken away all the habitat. So how do we let them go? You know, and we put them back. I was reading a story the other day about. It's just sad. You know, every time elephants being slaughtered for their tusks, and the whole thing. The various cultures slaughtering these great animals, bears and tigers, so they can get a little body part that's an aphrodisiac, or it's goes well with a meal. It's like, don't you just want to grab those people and smack them around a little bit and say, get over your darn culture.
Yeah.
Really, move on.
I watched
it's the 21st century.
I watched an educational movie about it not too long ago, what we're talking about, Madagascar. It's pretty good.
Oh, my God. I'll tell you the truth about Madagascar. Kathleen and I were watching it. We got through by half an hour, and we just turned it off. We said, this is disgusting. It was one of the worst movies I think I've ever seen. We were done. And I don't know. I don't know what it was about the movie. It was just, it was obnoxious, and I just couldn't take it. So, all right, we got a lot to do on the show, so we better get right to it. It's Pumpkin Day. I see I'm getting tweeted already. It's pretty amazing here that, did we lose our?
We had George. I'm going to call him right back.
Call him right back. Maybe he got.
He must not like Madagascar.
Maybe he did like Madagascar, and he's mad at me. Because George Janowicz, that's how some people pronounce it. It's Janowicz. I guess some other people would pronounce it. He's with the Illinois Giant Pumpkin Growers Association, and they're having the big pumpkin weigh-off today out at Benston's Pumpkin Farm in Homer Glen. So if you're near the area, I guess the weighing starts about noon. And so we're going to get a report from him. Oh, is he back?
We got him.
Okay, good. So George will be on just a second. Art Scheel from American Organic. And I guess it's without an S on the end. American Organic. And he's going to talk about cover crops, because I've had people say, hey, well, you know, can I plant a cover crop? And what should I be planting? And let's go to the guy who knows what he's doing. So Art Scheel will be on, and George will be reporting from the pumpkin way off throughout the show as we prepare for the biggest pumpkin in Illinois. And funny that about that, because I've already gotten tweets. I got one from Nikki Jabour, and she has a gardening program in Nova Scotia, Canada. And she tweeted this morning that she's talking to Danny Dill, heir to the Dill's Atlantic Giant Pumpkins, the ones that started it all the giant pumpkins. So George better measure up, because I'm being outdone by a program in Nova Scotia.
We can't have that.
We can't have that. No. And actually, Nikki's going to be on this. If we can work it out, Nikki's going to be on the program next week, because her show is on at the same time as mine, her radio program in Nova Scotia. So we're going to do a little dueling radio shows next week. So I need to tweet that.
That'll be fun.
Yeah. Yeah. So Kathleen, maybe you could tweet that. And I want to thank the folks. Angler Archer says, listening to Mike Now on WCPT Radio. You should too. Yes, absolutely. Cope Dog tweets, I hope Mike Now remembers to mention that it's time to nominate Community Gardener of the Year. And then he puts a link up there. I didn't know it was time to nominate the Community Gardener of the Year. So maybe we can post that. That's Green Net's got the Community Gardener of the Year awards up. And just go to greennetchicago.org. and events/events and look around for Community Gardener of the Year. And maybe we'll talk about that later. And of course, Annie Haven, who was on last week, is tweeting, and all these folks listening to the show. And I'm always very pleased to have them on my program and listening to it and tweeting and on Facebook and all that. And let's go to, oh yeah, and by the way, second hour, we get really serious. Well, we'll do some pumpkins again, but then we get serious and talk about concentrated feeding, animal feeding operations in Illinois, and how Karen Hudson at the Illinois Citizens for Clean Air and Water, and a couple of lawyers, Daniel Diamond and Michelle Merkel, are working on that issue in Illinois, and how somebody actually got a tax break because they got moved next, well, CAFO moved next to them, and it lowered the property values, which is not fun, but at least there's some recourse now. And we, you know, but the whole point is stop those inhumane businesses. Okay, let's go to the phone. And George, how are you this morning?
Good. How you doing, Mike?
Great. All right. Some people say Janowick. Some people say, I mean, don't you have a family pronunciation of the name? I think
we just go with Janowick.
Okay. Okay,
most
great.
People go with Janowiak.
Yeah, but, Janowiak or Janowiak.
It's a good Polish name.
It is. You're a paisan. All right.
That's right.
And George is with, well, George has been growing giant pumpkins for how long now?
Probably close to 20 years.
You know, and I posted your YouTube video from last year. On my website. Go to MikeNovak.net, this week's show, and there's a YouTube video that George posted last year, and it kind of, you know, in a very short span, shows you how to grow a pumpkin and then how to try to move it when it gets to be 600 or 800 pounds, which is quite an effort in itself, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I bet that's got to be one of the most difficult things is that you grow a pumpkin in Illinois. What's the record we're trying to break here?
Right now it stands at 1,493 pounds.
1,493 pound pumpkin. All right.
Yep.
My ego isn't even that large. but I guess on the East Coast this year, somebody broke the 2,000 pound barrier.
Yeah, something that wasn't never supposed to happen happened.
Well, why do you say? Go ahead.
Well, it's just 2,000 pounds. These things, you only have a limited number of days to grow them.
And, yeah.
You know, so at that rate, that pumpkin's probably putting on 50 pounds a day for several days to get that big.
50 pounds? How does a pumpkin put on 50 pounds a day?
Yeah, you got to have the right seed, the right soil, and a lot of luck. Good weather, too.
Yeah. Well, do you think the heat had something to do with it?
Well, the heat, you know, here this year, you probably had to overcompensate with water to get the plants to grow, a lot of misting. And so as long as you're able to keep the plants wet, chances are something will grow. But a lot of times you might get some disease growing in the soil as well if you overwater.
Right. Now, you had disease problems this year, I understand.
Yeah. Actually, I lost most of my plants probably by the early August. So whatever I had growing was just barely, it was growing at a slow pace. So, I didn't end up as big as I wanted to. You know, everyone's shooting for that 1,500 pound mark in Illinois.
Now, you're looking around. You are this moment at Benston's Pumpkin Farm in Homer Glen, right?
Yeah.
You're looking around. Who's your competition? Who do you think's got a big pumpkin?
Well, probably the current state record owner is going to probably, you know, challenge the record again this year. So we're hoping he may hit 1,500 pounds, something that's never been done here in Illinois.
Wow.
He's loaded up. I mean, I wish I could take a picture and show it to you because you would not believe how big this thing is.
Why can't you take a picture?
Well, I'll take one. You want me to send it to you?
Yeah, well, if you can pop one over to, let's see, how would we get it? You guys.
Well, I could send it over to the, I don't know, however I can.
I'll tell you what,
send it over to you on your phone. I don't know, however you want to do it.
Send it to Mike at MikeNovak.net.
Okay.
And then I will get it here, and I will pop it on Facebook.
All right. right.
So let's see if we can do that this morning. It's Mike at MikeNowak.net. Of course, it's N-O-W-A-K, and you know that because you're a good Polack yourself.
That's right.
How many contenders do you see on site?
Well, right now we have 10, and they're pulling in from all over the place. We'll probably expect almost 30 pumpkins before weigh-off starts at 12.
Wow, 30 pumpkins. And even weighing them has got to be an interesting challenge.
It's all done by forklifts now for the most part.
Oh, wow. Yeah, but did anybody ever, accidentally slide a forklift into one of those pumpkins?
Maybe years ago, I thought I'd seen something like that happen, but these guys are real careful.
They better be.
Take your time getting them up here.
Yeah. All right, I'll tell you what, George, we're going to get back to you right after 10 a.m.
Okay.
So why don't you drag in, see if you can find one of the guys who's got a contender, and we'll see if we can extract some secrets of great pumpkin growing from that person.
Oh, yeah. He's full of secrets, no doubt.
Well, as Ken Benson once told me from Triton College, Ken Benson said the secret was manure, manure, manure.
To a certain extent, I probably have done over the years, 20 yards of manure on my one patch. A lot of compost, premium compost is really the way to go.
Yeah.
Because the manure still has to break down a little bit more.
Oh, I see. Well, I think that's what he meant, though, broken down manure. So it turned it into compost. But you're right. It's a really good point. You don't want it hot. You want it mellow.
That's it.
Okay. All right. George Janowick, we're going to be back with him just after 10 o'clock back at the Illinois Giant Pumpkin Growers Association pumpkin weigh-off for 2012. And we'll see if we break the record of 1,500 pounds in Illinois. We won't know until later because the weighing doesn't start till noon. But we'll talk to you shortly after 10 a.m., George.
All right. Sounds good.
Take care, buddy.
All righty.
Bye-bye. There he goes. And we will have him on in just a little bit. And in just a second, we will also have Art Scheel of American Organic. It's going to be a beautiful day in the neighborhood today. It's already a beautiful day in the neighborhood, especially in the Ukrainian village, where it's the second and final day of the Christie Weber Landscapes Farm and Garden Center Fall Fest. From 11 a.m., right after this show, to 4 p.m., the yard is a carnival of fall fun, including a petting zoo, pumpkin carving, scarecrow making, face painting, a farmer's market courtesy of Fulton Street Farmer's Market, balloon animals, cookie decorating, a hay maze, and of course, a hay bale ride to and from Design Harvest down the street. Dress up your dog and he or she gets a free rawhide bone reward. Woohoo! There are tons of pumpkins and fall decor like Indian corn, gourds, and corn stalks. All kids dressed up in costume get a free pie pumpkin. That's different from a pumpkin pie. Mm. I'll take pie pumpkin. I guess you take it home and then you make your own pie.
Oh.
Okay. In addition, Christie Weber herself, maybe not herself. Christie's unveiling. I know she's driving the wagon. That's what I hear. The hay wagon, so herself, she'll be doing that. Christie is unveiling her new wild bird feeding department by featuring grand opening specials. It's also a spring blooming bulb open house. Select the best bulbs from the best selections from Holland, and they're the best they've ever had. Today, from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at 2200 West Grand Avenue in the Ukrainian village, Christie Weber Landscapes Farm and Garden Center Fall Fest. Be there. Aloha.
Spending more time at home these days? Give yourself some room. Renovate your basement or attic. You'll increase your living space and your home's resale value, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling needs, including additions, renovations, and other home improvements. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Allergies acting up, trouble breathing, headaches, sinus pressure, you're tired, congested. Isn't it time to feel better? Breathe deeply and easily. Get rid of the symptoms that complicate your life. Dr. Bonnie Flaster is an acupuncturist and chiropractor who helps people get rid of allergies without using drugs, shots, or needles. Call Dr. Flaster at River North Wellness Center, 312-642-7545, or go to rivernorthwellness.com to find out how to get your body feeling better so you can enjoy life again.
Here's a news bulletin from the D. Landreth Seed Company. They have received more heirloom garlic. What's the big deal, you say? Well, many of you have now received the Landreth Fall Bulb Catalog, and if you haven't, you should order it immediately. And when you tried to order garlic, you found that they were already out of many varieties. That's because so many customers placed pre-orders in July and August. But fear not, gentle gardener. Landreth went to the farmer who grows their garlic, and because this year was such a great year for growing garlic, he has a surplus crop. As a result, they have restocked from their 2013 production crop many of the heirloom garlic varieties as of this weekend. So if you tried to order and they were out, please check the website again, which is, of course, LandrethSeeds.com, L-A-N-D-R-E-T-H, seeds.com. If you have friends who tried to order and could not, go to the Facebook page, Landreth Seed Co., and share their status update with your friends, or call 800-654-2407, 800-654-2407, and tell them Mike sent you. D. Landreth Seed Company, purveyor of fine seeds since 1784. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. It is officially fall. We are into the fall season, and a lot of folks are thinking about their, not just pumpkins, but their fall crops and how they want to improve the spring crops. And one of the ways you can do that is cover crops. Now, I've got on the line Art Scheel. Art, good morning. You're on the Mike Novak Show.
Good morning, Mike. Good to be with you.
It's great to have you on board, and thank you so much for being with me. I found out about you through Kim Marson with Sweet Home Organics, and you know, I got to talking to her about cover crops, and people write me and they say, oh, you know, I want to put some cover crops down, and I don't really know what I'm doing. And Kim said, Art is the guy. He's the guy you want to talk to. Tell me about your operation, American Organic, in Warren, Illinois.
American Organic is a family-owned and operated company focusing predominantly on organic seed, obviously because of the name, but organic and non-GMO farm seed, cover crops. We do things from pasture management to anything that does with gardens and soils and crops.
How would you describe the growing year this year? I know it was probably pretty tough. It got hot. It was dry. It's things have recovered somewhat. How did you fare this year?
Well, we like everybody else, struggled long. Finding seed, quality seed has been a challenge for us because obviously with the heat and everything, we weren't able to produce as much as we normally could. But probably the best way to describe it, as I heard many times this past week, it was a season that makes one look forward to next year.
Yeah, but what if it happens again, Art?
Well, that's a whole nother story. But the whole purpose of cover crops, not just to have something out there growing, but it actually is part of it, is a tool to balance the soils, enhance the soils, and as one has a biologically active soil, it actually will withstand drought and other stresses much better.
Well, that's a great segue there, Art. And I get people who call me and they write to me and they say, you know, I've thought about experimenting with cover crops because, let's face it, over the past several decades, you know, going back 60 years, folks have gotten into their head, all I got to do is throw down some fertilizer, some synthetic fertilizer, and everything's fine. Why would they go to a cover crop instead?
Well, for example, this would be a great year, even though we're running out of time. Some of your cover crops, like your cereal rye, your rye grasses, or even just oats, are great nutrient scavengers. A lot of the even the synthetic fertilizers or any fertilizers that they've applied weren't utilized by the plants this year because of how dry it was. And so literally we have time with some of those that I've just listed that'll actually sequester a lot of that nitrogen and potash in particular and hold it up, store it up in the roots until next spring, and it doesn't allow it to leach out.
Well, let's talk. You said and made an important point, which is we're getting to the close to the end of the time when you can plant some of these. And actually, your choice of cover crops right now is a little bit limited. Which cover crops you mentioned, oats and rye, what else might be available right now?
You can get some value depending on where you're at. Your vetches, like the hairy vetch, we can use some of that if it's put in here within the next few days. Some of the clovers mixed with the vetch may overwinter. Obviously the vetch and the clovers would be legumes, which work a little differently than what your ryegrasses would. But unfortunately, we're looking at the weather patterns. We're starting to cool down, so a lot of the broadleaf type materials don't work as well. So we're really stuck with most of the grasses.
And the grasses are, as you said, are not legumes, but they do other things in bringing nutrients, as you mentioned already, right?
Yes. The one thing that the grasses do is they normally have a very fibrous root system, and so they're really feeling out throughout the soil, sequestering those nutrients. Also, they're great because of their fibrous root system. Anything growing out there over winter, it gives a place for the microbes and whatever to be working around. So when the soil does warm up in the spring, the soil literally warms up quicker because of the microbial activity.
Ah, that's a good point. All right, now you're on a traditional, I mean, not a traditional farm, but you're on a real farm. You know, a lot of folks are in the city and they're growing in community gardens and raised beds and that sort of thing. Can you apply cover crops in a raised bed?
You can raise cover crops in a pot.
Really?
Scale is not the issue. The soil is the issue. If you have a 3x3 raised bed, it's a great place to use them. I have a living cover out there. If you have a 2-acre CSA type of operation, you can use it there, or literally to the large size full-scale farming operation. So, yeah, scale is not the concern.
What is the concern then if scale is not the concern?
Really for cover crops, timing, how you're going to use them, what your crops are going to be the following year. We look at the soil first and use the cover crops to enhance the soil. We keep trying to look long term rather than just what can I do right now.
So when you say you're looking long term, over how many years are you looking, and what kind of a rotation would you get? Can you maybe give me an example of the kind of rotation you might have?
Well, I'll take it on a farm scale side, and I think this can be applied to gardens. Because the crops were so poor and we had all those nutrients put out there, by using cover crops, a number of our customers are out there literally can scavenge about half. If they didn't use half the nutrients, they can scavenge a good majority of those nutrients and keep them around for next year, which actually reduce their cost for applying fertilizer the following year.
Mm-hmm.
That organic matter help is what you're really trying to do with the cover crops. It's not just having something out there to be green in the spring. It's something there to begin building organic matter. And it's the organic matter that the microbes feed on. It's the organic matter that gives you homes for a plethora of all sorts of animals and what have you that live, fungi and whatever that live in the soil that are beneficial.
Well, as I always say on this show, it's the biology, stupid.
Exactly.
And that's what we're trying to do is get the biology going in. And that's where outfits like yours, at American Organic, and by the way, we're talking to Art Scheel from American Organic, and their website is American organic.com, and he's got lists of the various seed corn. He's got the products that they sell, like alfalfa, clovers, grasses and mixes, cereal grains, brassicas, turnips, peas, fall seeds, sorghum and Sudan grass, cover crops, mustards, etc. You got a lot of stuff going on there.
Well, we find new things every year. You mentioned mustards and radishes. They do, you know, not only do, should people be considering this fall, but literally how they work their gardens down this fall to prepare for early early planting of cover crops if they run out of time this fall.
All right. So for instance, and by the way, I just want to get in a comment that I got on Twitter here that one of the things that grasses do in the fall and winter is prevent soil erosion as well.
Absolutely.
So that's another reason you might want to have some of those grasses there, because you're literally not losing your soil.
Exactly.
Back to what we were just talking about. You were talking about getting going early in the spring. Let's say some folks, they missed the window of opportunity. They wanted to do a certain kinds of cover crops. What can they be thinking about for the spring? Now, normally they'd be thinking of planting, but you would put a cover crop where? In some place that had been heavily farmed this year and you want to regenerate the soil?
Well, let's go to the garden side of things. Say it's too late. It's definitely too late for like the mustards and radishes and things like this. Well, if they can have their soil work so it's warmed up earlier in the spring, they can use those mustards and radishes as a biofumigant, especially in front of real sensitive crops like tomatoes, peppers, things that tend to, we talked about pumpkins earlier. We have a number of people that will plant the mustards early to cut down on the fusarium molds and things that are growing in the soil. Because the mustards will actually help reduce the level of a lot of the pathogenic molds that affect things like pumpkins and, again, peppers and tomatoes.
Ah, so that makes a lot of sense then. So what you do is, as soon as it's early enough for the seed to be viable, which would be when in this part of Illinois?
You know, in this part of Illinois, we're generally looking, the first half of April. When the soils are starting to warm up, getting where they're nice and pliable and not too wet to create compaction.
Right.
So you can start pretty early with them. That's one instance. Many times people will literally frost seed clovers in, if they've missed the window of opportunity, if they're going to put it in before sweet corn, they got a late sweet corn crop that they'd plant in June. You could actually frost seed some clovers in at that time to develop both a green manure crop and produce 20, 30 pounds of nitrogen for that sweet corn crop.
So the idea is that in early April, yeah, you're putting this crop down in the ground. You get the soil supercharged with nutrients. And then when the warm season crops, you know, in Illinois, you really don't even want to plant your tomatoes till June 1st.
Exactly.
And so you've got 2 months where you're charging up the soil. Then you, and as you said, it also fights against some of those pathogens that might be in there. And then you plant those crops and they're likely to be healthier.
Exactly. Plus, even something simple as oats planted real early, which, you know, can handle the cold and the frost and things, will do a tremendous job. You can create a tremendous amount of root mass there to be worked in the soil. And that actually, as you said earlier, you're supercharging the microbial activity in the soil just by having live living roots growing there earlier before that crop actually establishes itself.
Of course, because, you know, if you have the plant material and something live, that's the biology is attracted to that. Plants, you know, they give off exudates that attract bacteria and fungi, and then all the rest of the soil food web gets involved, and bam, you've got some mighty nice soil for some of those crops later on.
Exactly.
Well, that's cool. Hey, listen, I know you've got to get going because it's Sunday and you got to get to church. And I appreciate the time you've taken with me. I want to let people know. Let me ask you just one more question before I let you go.
Mm-hmm.
If you're dealing with grasses and perhaps any other kind of cover crop, even in the fall or spring, what's the danger of one of those crops ever becoming invasive and being hard to get rid of in that bed?
Like any other tool, they need to be used properly. They need to be understood. You're exactly right. Especially the grasses, the ryegrasses, vetches, if they're not managed properly, they can become an invasive. So that everybody that or anybody that uses them should recognize the parameters in which to plant them, when to work them in, not to let them get too far along. All those things to use that tool properly.
So let's say I've got somebody who's listening to the show right now, and they're a community gardener, and they're very excited by the idea of doing these cover crops, and they decide they want to order something from American Organic. Would you walk them through it?
Oh, sure. We do a lot of, that's where we feel the education one-on-one is still the best way. You can read all you want. You can look online all you want, but it's the one-on-one conversation that is the best education.
Well, I advise people go to the website, American-Organic.com. It's organic is singular. Just make sure you do that. And go to products, and it lists among all the products there, cover crops. If you think you wanted to get something going this year and experiment with that, I ended up getting some buckwheat seed, and I realized it's too late for the season. But you know, I'm gonna hang on to it and try it out next year, because for one thing, it's a beautiful crop.
Yes.
When it comes up, it's just so lovely. Now, is that something I can use in the spring, or is that a summer a cover crop?
No, buckwheat, as long as you're away from the buckwheat, sensitive to frost, so you'd have to plant it when you're pretty well safe from frost, but it works very well in the spring.
Yeah, okay. So if you're interested, go to American-Organic.com, ask for Art. There's probably other people that'll help you too.
Yes.
But
and while I'm thinking of it, we just changed our phone number.
Oh, okay.
Our phone number is 855-945-2449.
855. Give me that again.
855.
Mm-hmm.
945.
Mm-hmm.
2449.
Okay, 855-945-2449. And if anybody heard that, they're in the car, don't worry about it, shoot me an email, and I can send that phone number along to you. Art Scheel from American Organic, I really appreciate the time on this Sunday. We got to talk again. I think we do this in the spring, definitely, when we get to the point where we're getting some of those early cover crops in the ground. I think it'd be a great conversation.
Well, I appreciate very much the opportunity.
All right, you take care. Have a great Sunday.
Thank you, Mike.
Bye-bye. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Denny doesn't... What happened to your microphone there?
My microphone fell off, so I'm going boxing announcing style here. And then this corner.
Exactly. He's hold- Are you ready to rumble? Oh, you sure you're okay there, Denny?
We got it, buddy. We got it.
Okay, good. I look over in the room, and he's flailing with them. It looked like you're alligator wrestling with the microphone there.
Reason number 26 not to get cameras in the studio.
did they have cameras yesterday?
They did. We were trying to transition between shows, so it was kind of tough. So there was one point where you could just see Rich Cowgill's forehead. That's it.
Okay.
It's well, Mighty House with Forehead Man.
We got to try it here, because then I think we would train it on my cup of coffee here.
Oh, that'd be sweet.
On the reusable cup that I bring every week. Of course, it's plastic.
Yeah.
I got to get me a steel reusable coffee. Do they make
those are nice.
Steel? But wouldn't that be hot on the outside?
It would.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. I'll tell you what, let's get Rick in here early today. Let's give him some time. But, you know, he'll probably say, I got to go. You know, now that I've given him a little extra time. But Rick DeMaio weather is coming up in just a second. And here's some information from the Care of Trees and the USDA Forest Service about why trees have fall color. Chlorophyll gives leaves their basic green color. Okay, write this down, kids, because there will be a quiz at the end of the hour. Chlorophyll, as you know, gives leaves their basic green color and is necessary for photosynthesis. Now, carotenoids produce yellow, orange, and brown colors in such things as corn, carrots, and daffodils, as well as rutabagas. I should play my Snoop Dogg thing.
Just the word Snoop Dogg coming out of your mouth. This is hilarious to me. A Snoop Dogg.
Now, what's wrong with that, man? Wait. I've got the rutabaga here. I believe in the library. Let's see if I can call that up. Hold on just one second. I believe we call it rutabagas. I can't imagine why I would call it rutabagas. It's right here.
I'm excited.
There it is. You haven't heard this?
No.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Well, let's pop this baby up here. There. Where are we there? Boom. All right. I'm going to just move it a little bit up here. Okay. You haven't heard this?
No, I don't think so. I don't believe I've heard this.
Okay.
What up, though? Shout out to my homeboy Ian Neal in Cardiff for breaking the world's records for the biggest vegetable. Man, I want to tell you something, man. When I do my show in Cardiff, I want you to come backstage and see me because I do vegetation myself, and I want to know your secrets so I can show you my vegetables and see if you can grow that into a real big vegetable. So Ian Neal from Cardiff, come see your boy Snoop Dogg. I got 2 tickets for you when I get to town. You dig?
Yeah. And he's not talking about pumpkins.
No, he's not. He's not talking about rutabagas either.
No.
So anyway, back to the spot. Carotenoids produce yellow, orange, and brown, as I said, and for corn, carrots, daffodils, rutabagas, buttercups, and bananas. Build me up, buttercup. Anthocyanins give color to things like cranberries, red apples, Concord grapes, and blueberries. Both chlorophyll and carotenoids are present in the chloroplasts of leaf cells throughout the growing season. I hope people are getting this. Most anthocyanins are produced in the autumn in response to bright light and excess plant sugars within leaf cells. Now, during the growing season, chlorophyll is continually being produced and broken down, and that's why the leaves appear green. As night length increases in the autumn, chlorophyll production slows down and then stops, and eventually all the chlorophyll is destroyed. The carotenoids and the anthocyanins that are present in the leaf are then unmasked. I like that, unmasked, and show their true colors. That's how it works, baby. You dig?
You dig.
Invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look at your trees. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220, 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees, their business is people and their love for trees.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I publish the greenest magazine in Chicago. Natural Awakenings is packed with fresh information to help you lead a more healthful and sustainable life. Whether you practice yoga or work out, shop fair trade, are mindful of the food you eat and grow, or want a greener and more balanced life, Natural Awakenings is your go-to source for making informed decisions. In print or online, each month you'll find the latest news about what's healthy for our bodies, our families, and the earth, as well as a complete calendar of local events. And did I tell you that the magazine is free and available at locations across northern Chicagoland? Or find us online at nachicagonorth.com. If you're a green or wellness business in search of like-minded consumers, our readers are your potential customers. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings Magazine. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Summer has arrived, and for many gardeners, that means heat, drought, and watering bans. Help your landscapes thrive despite these seasonal challenges with proper care and Milorganite fertilizer. Hi, I'm gardening expert Melinda Myers. Mulch the soil with a layer of organic material to conserve moisture, reduce weeds, and improve the soil as it breaks down. Water plants thoroughly and less frequently whenever you irrigate the garden. This encourages deep roots, making your plants more drought tolerant and pest resistant. Water early in the day to reduce water loss to evaporation. And be sure to use Milorganite for all your summer fertilization needs. The organic nitrogen is slow release and won't burn plants even during drought. Milorganite remains in the soil until the conditions are right for plant growth, including your lawn, so there's no need to water it in. Plus, the 4% non-staining iron promotes deep green growth. So choose Milorganite for better results naturally. Visit Milorganite.com for a garden center near you. That's Milorganite.com.
Hi.
I'm Archie Bell of the Trails.
Yeah.
Of Houston, Texas.
Yeah.
We don't only sing, but we dance just as good as we want.
Oh, man.
In Houston, we've just started a new dance.
Yeah.
Called the Tighten Up.
I could use some tightening up.
Tighten up with. First, tighten up on the drum. Come on now, drummer. I want you to tighten it up for me now.
Let's tighten it up. Yeah. All right, let's tighten it up with Rick DeMaio. Who's on the phone? You're always tightened up, aren't you, Rick?
Oh, yeah. You know, that's a great song when you want to clean the house.
Yeah. That's a great song for anything, man.
You know, you're doing the vacuuming and the mopping and the sweeping and the dusting. And you're
And then it's ba da 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 da.
Oh, there's some stuff over there.
And then playing little air guitar with the mop and the, yeah.
I'm organizing the phone screening booth.
By the way, Mike, I just wanted to ask you a question. Is this show being recorded for quality assurance?
Unfortunately, yes. it's being recorded for quality assurance. I'm not exactly sure, but
You know, you were mentioning before about the leaves turning, and what was the thing that makes things yellow? Was it carotenoids?
Right, carotenoids.
Yeah, I think that's what my mother was always telling me as as a kid, to make sure when I brushed my teeth, I got rid of those carotenoids off my incisors. Yeah,
okay. All right. I don't have a rim shot here. I really can't help you out, Rick.
Well, you can probably get one from Snoop Dogg. I like how he transfers the word vegetables into vegetables.
You dig?
Yeah. I still don't know how that man has gone as far as he has gone. I don't get it. I guess that's a sad state of our society, huh? When Snoop Dogg is still popular 15 years after he was really popular.
Wait. He's a genius.
Right, that's what I say. It's a sad state.
Hey, Snoop, talk to me, Snoop.
What up, though? Shout out to my homeboy Ian Neal in Cardiff.
All right.
For breaking the world's records for the biggest vegetable. Man, I want to tell you something, man. When I do my show in Cardiff, I want you to come backstage and see me, because I do vegetation myself, and I want to know your secret so I can show you my vegetables and see if you can grow that into a real big vegetable. So Ian Neal from Cardiff,
brother.
Come see your boy Snoop Dogg. I got two tickets for you when I get to town. You
got
dig?
It. Yeah, I got it, Snoop. Yeah, he's the only person that can actually be famous with the lower part of his mouth moving to the right while the top part stays stationary.
Oh, dear.
You kind of did get that picture in your mind, right?
I can't get it out of my mind now. It's right. Stuck there, okay? So it's kind of like watching Clutch Cargo, right, in the old days, right?
I guess.
All right. I got to ask Denny, have you ever seen Clutch Cargo?
No.
Okay. You got to go on YouTube, find Clutch Cargo.
Okay.
Or Denny, you can watch me when I first did the weather back in 1995. People say I look like Clutch Cargo.
Really? Is that what they said to you?
And that wasn't a good thing. And I was like, who's Clutch Cargo? And I'm like, I gotta change the way I talk.
You know,
that's very good.
That, you know, and the fact that you've got that at your own YouTube out there, Mr. DeMaio.
Yeah, you don't have to bring that up.
Yeah. Okay, I won't bring it up.
That's the one bad thing about teaching every semester is kids Google your name, and next thing they go, by the way, Mr. DeMille, do you know you're on YouTube? I'm like, yes, I know. You don't have to remind me.
I love the YouTube.
Bunch of new kids, and every freshman, it gets more hits, and it's like, it'll never go away. So
it's true. It never will. Then once you're on YouTube, baby,
you're
there forever.
You were talking about the leaves turning. Mike, have you ever seen leaves turn this early before, ever, around here?
It's not even October. Wait. Yeah, tomorrow's October 1st. Yeah.
All right. Today, by the way, is my parents' 56th wedding anniversary. So
oh, congratulations.
Anniversary to Barbara and Bernie. They've had two arguments, believe it or not, in those 56 years. Two. One lasted 26 years. The other one is still going on. So.
But where's the rim shot? I don't have one here. I can hit the bell. There we go.
And my mother will never let my dad forget the fact that while they're on their honeymoon in Mount Airy Lodge in the Poconos, because that's what you did back then, you lived in New York, it was 4 days later, he's sitting in front of the TV set watching Don Larson pitch a perfect game against the Brooklyn Dodgers in the World Series. How about that for saying, Dad, what was the best part about your honeymoon? Oh, Ricky, it had to be when I was watching the Yankees and the Dodgers on the TV in the hotel lobby there, and there's Don Larson pitching the perfect game. That's what my mother gives. Look.
The secret to a happy marriage.
But again, you know, we're talking about the fact that the leaves are turning, and, you know, people say, oh, yeah, it was because we had, you know, such a warm and obviously not a warm, but a hot, dry summer. But if you remember, Mike, this is probably the more important thing. When did these leaves actually come out? They didn't come out the normal time, the first week of May, did they?
No.
Yeah, they were pretty much out. Do you remember what it looked like around here in about the second or the third week of April? We were fully leafed out.
Yeah, I do remember that. There was it was very, very early, and so I'm wondering how much we can attribute the early color to that.
Oh, I definitely you can do that, and this would be one of those great, great science projects where anybody either in high school or college or even, you know, some of the people who run some of the nurseries around here, excuse me, when you have something that has never happened before and you're trying to figure out what to attribute that to, I mean, I remember we were talking about this back in April when we had that really, really warm March where we had temperatures about 11 degrees above average. We're looking around going, the trees are all bloomed out. It's way too early. And you were talking to people, I mean, I'm talking to people who were in their 70s and 80s. They were saying, we have never, ever seen this before. And sure enough, now the leaves, I'm sure, are probably going, you know what? We've been around for a long time. We've got to go. And the fact that we had this really, really warm, dry summer is obviously probably, you know, enhanced the early start to the fall foliage. But I've been looking around and across websites up in Wisconsin. They're almost 60 to 80% turn just to the west of Green Bay and parts of Michigan. And I know, I don't know if you were talking about it earlier, I may have missed it, but, you know, Michigan apples are, what, $1.99 a pound in some areas? So we're paying the price for having really, really warm weather back in March. I don't know if an early fall foliage is called paying the price, but we're definitely seeing the changes from a short-term climactic standpoint of those weird climatic conditions, Mike, that we had last spring.
And as you were talking, I was checking out some websites and some of the articles about the fall color. There's a guy in Green Bay who says fall color won't be as vibrant or sharp this year.
No,
because he says the trees are changing about 4 to 5 weeks earlier. The lack of water left them stressed, and now they want to go to sleep.
Yeah, that's basically it. And I think the more so the west of Green Bay, because that northern third of Wisconsin actually got some pretty decent rain during the early part of the summer. But if you go southern Wisconsin, central Wisconsin, of course, most of Illinois, where we're still, believe it or not, I don't know if you realize it, but we really haven't gotten much rain lately, and the ground is looking kind of dry.
I noticed that. Actually, I have been paying attention to that.
And it doesn't look like we're going to get much rain over the next 5 to 6 days. I mean, this weather is great for late September, but this is not good. We're now down a deficit for the year, almost 8 inches compared to what we should have. And unfortunately, the pattern over the next 2 to 3 weeks does not bode well for any sort of one of those late summer or early fall kind of humid periods where you get 4 or 5 days of nice soaking rain. And this is what I get concerned about heading into the next year's growing season, is not getting that subsoil moisture, basically refreshed with moisture and precipitation before that top 4 or 5 inches becomes a little cooler and a little bit more compacted. So a little bit of concern you're going into next season from a standpoint of what's happening now, Mike.
Yeah, I just got a tweet from Dave in Madison. He says, peak leaves in Madison now. I mean, yeah, it's September 30th.
Right, peak now. And the thing about it is, I think it was last week I was showing a bunch of students one thing I like about when I teach over at Columbia College is I like to show my students some of the websites, particularly the travelwisconsin.com website, because it's gotten better and better every year. And I do this from a standpoint of what they can do now in college and how they can improve on things that they see. It's just, just a way of teaching them how to apply their, how to apply their education. And you scroll across each county, and it pulls up the county. You'll have like an orange or a red or maybe a yellow signifying, how far along the leaves are. And just within a matter of a week, I've seen some of these counties go from like 20 to 40 to 60%. And what's also great about these sites, you click on and then people download photographs and places where you can lodge and places where you can drink. I mean, there's nothing better than going to Wisconsin, stopping off and having a beer during Oktoberfest. But it's almost like Oktoberfest has started in late September. And the leaves, as I guess you said, Dave from Madison said, yeah, they're turning. And not only are they turning, but they're turning quickly. And even driving out to DeKalb over the last couple of days here, Tuesday and Thursday, I'm looking around and I'm going, it looks like the middle of October. So the entire summer season in addition to what happened last spring, has definitely made things about 2 to 3 weeks ahead of schedule, and quickly at that.
Yeah, yeah. And here's another article I just found in the Huffington Post, and it's actually regarding Arkansas and Oklahoma. There's a U.S. National Forest spokeswoman, Tracy Farley, says, and this is a quote, "I haven't heard anyone talk about having a spectacular fall."
No.
So
it's spectacular, but it's going to be a quick spectacular. Yeah.
It might be. And, and it just shows that. And there may be parts of the country that are doing better, but it's been a tough year for trees. Right. And you got to get to the forecast here, but it's something that you remind me, being 8 inches short of rain, water, while the ground is still not frozen, your trees and shrubs.
Not compacted, yeah.
Yeah, they need to get hydrated. So what's going to happen this week?
Okay, so we had beautiful weather yesterday, temperatures in the mid to upper 70s. We had another little reinforcing shot of cooler air come down Lake Michigan last night, so temperatures maybe mid to upper 60s today. But then we'll slowly warm right back up, lower 70s tomorrow, upper 70s Tuesday, maybe even close to 80 degrees, believe it or not, by Wednesday. And then it begins to cool down a little bit by the end of the week. We do see much, much cooler air coming in here. So to put that into climatological numbers, temperatures about 10 degrees above average over the next 3 to 4 days, with zero chances of precipitation, and then we go back into about 3 to 6 degrees below normal temperature-wise. But the most important thing, Mike, I would say over the next 10 to 15 days, rainfall probably less than an inch to an inch and a half. And that's not good, because we need three times as much of that to get us close to where we should be for this time of the year.
Great, Rick. And that's the word. It's going to get cool, but don't get fooled. We don't have any rain. All right, I'll talk to you next week.
Take care, Mike.
Watch out, here I come.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, their business's people and their love for trees. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
You know, in the overnights, they have Dan's Factory.
Yeah.
This is Dan's Farm.
I like it.
Dan's Farm with Mike Novak and Denny Sheeter.
Oh, yeah, buddy.
Okay. But I love your air keyboards you play there in the little booth.
This little ledge right here.
Yeah, you got the ledge. You can do the air keyboard.
You know it.
We're going to get into some serious stuff today in the second hour, but not quite yet. Karen Hudson is on the line, and Denny, you can start lining up some of our other guests as well. But before we get to them, I promised you we would have a report on the great pumpkin way off today, and we go back to George Janowick. How you doing, George?
Good. We're getting busy. The big ones are showing up.
The big ones are showing up. He's at Benston's Pumpkin Farm in Homer Glen. If you want to stop by there, I can give you the address. I'm tracking it down here. Unless you got it on hand there.
It's off of 151st Street in Homer Glen. You can't miss it.
That's it. You can't miss it. Just come on by. So who have you got there? Have you got somebody for me to talk to?
Well, I got the reigning state champ here.
The reigning state champ.
And we just had last year's winner pull up in a big box truck. I know he has something big coming out of there.
Okay. Well, who is the reigning state champ?
We got Jeff Shazzy Shinoa.
All right. Why don't you hand that phone over to Jeff and let me say hi to him real quick.
Here's Jeff.
Hey, Jeff, how are you?
How you doing, Mike?
Great. It's great to have you on the radio. And I'm glad you're over at the Giant Pumpkin Way Off. What do you got this year? Are you a contender?
I think I got a pretty good one. We got some big ones still rolling in. I got one that's estimated about 1,400 pounds right now.
Whoa.
And it came from a genetic seed that has a propensity to go a little bit heavy, or sometimes a lot heavy. So if it weighs heavier than expected, then I could be anywhere over 1,500 pounds. I've also had pumpkins this side go light, up to 10% less than expected. And so it could weigh 1,200 pounds, but that's why we do this and have fun, and you don't know until you put them on the scale.
Well, but you have to have a rough idea. I mean, how do you know a pumpkin is a contender? How do you know when you go out into the field, that's the one that I want to bring to the contest?
We basically do, there's three measurements we do. We do a circumference around the widest point of the pumpkin, and then we do a measurement called a side-to-side. We take the tape measure, you put it to the ground, you arc it across the highest point of the pumpkin to the other side, and then you do another measurement from the stem side to the blossom side the same way. You arc it from the ground up over the highest point straight to the ground. We add those three numbers, and those three numbers give us what is called an OTT measurement, and we have charts that get adjusted every year. And if you go to that chart, you can get a basic estimate of what the pumpkin's going to weigh if it goes to the chart, and then if they can go heavier to the chart or lighter to the chart. So mine, basically, when I say it's a 1,400 estimate, the chart right now for me says my OTT number is 401. It was 185 inches circumference, 110 inches the side to side, 106 inches the stem to blossom. That equals 401, and then the chart that shows it's going to weigh about 1,393 pounds. So I'm just calling it 1,400 right now as an estimate.
I didn't know you guys were that scientific about it. I figured
they adjust the charts every year. This year is a new chart. And actually, by the old chart, my pumpkin is estimated at about 1360. The new chart had already took an account for the variance levels, and it's 1393. So I still like to go by the old chart so I don't get my hopes too high. And so it could actually, you know, like 1360, more like to the old chart, and the new chart is 1393, and So the new chart is showing up with all the pumpkins getting weighed across the country to be more accurate. And so we don't want the pumpkins to keep weighing heavier, 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 and they adjusted it back down again. So they compensate and they work on that chart. So everybody basically has an idea before you get to the weigh-off what you got, but you don't know what the wall thickness is going to be or the actual density of the flesh.
That's the question I was going to ask you. You can get fooled by the density of the flesh, and what determines how dense that is?
A lot of times it's genetic. It's some genetic strains just have a propensity to have a denser flesh. Similar to like if you took a 3x3 by a section of a basswood or a light pine, and you had the same block of a hardwood, and you weighed them, one's dense, one weighs more. Sometimes that flesh shows up that same way. When we carve them open, and if you cut them or if you carve them, sometimes you'll feel with the knife it's stringy and it's a thick and it's hard to cut through flesh. That's when they're heavier. The flesh that you can cut through like butter is usually lighter, and a lot of times that's genetic.
And I would imagine, though, that the one that you can cut through easier is going to make the better pie.
Yes. You're correct there.
Yeah, if you don't want that really dense stuff, because it's going to be eating like eating a block of wood, right?
Exactly. Stringy and meaty. Exactly. That's exactly why they grow those sugar pumpkins. They have that nice, softer, creamy flesh like that, specifically for that reason with the eater pumpkin.
Yeah.
And that's the way that works. Yep.
And you talked about it's also specific seed. What are you allowed to tell me what kind of seed you use this time?
Sure. I grew my seed. It was from a pumpkin 3 years ago, the 1303 Sweets. A guy from Michigan, great grower. He was actually grower of the year for the entire world. He had three pumpkins with the highest total of those three pumpkins a couple years ago. Well, he grew a 1,605-pound pumpkin from that seed.
Wow.
A guy from California last year grew a 1,693. Another guy from California grew a 1,560. And they all weighed heavier than expected. So I said, why not? I'm going to try that seed. You know, you got to pick your genetics.
Yeah.
And I made the right call. That was one that definitely produced for me this year.
Well, Jeff, that's just fabulous. I appreciate you taking the time and chatting with me. Good luck in the way off, which starts at noon, of course, at Benston's. Why don't you hand that phone back over to George for me?
No problem. Nice speaking with you.
All right. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Let's get back to George before we move along. You there with me, George?
Yeah, I'm here.
Wow, that's a great story. So we'll see
You got the lowdown, right?
Yeah, I got the lowdown. So you find somebody else. We'll talk to you at the end of the hour, okay?
All right, maybe I'll have the reigning champ from last year or the main competitor on for you.
I like it. Maybe have them duke it out with pumpkins somehow.
Well,
like,
you know, we got a pumpkin. I mean, this is kind of, you know, we got a pumpkin belt, a championship belt.
Oh, man.
So this is kind of, you know.
I would kill
like
to wear that belt.
Going on here.
That's better than a wrestling belt.
It is. Well, it is a wrestling belt. I had it made.
No.
It's a wrestling belt. Yeah, I guess you mean you don't have a picture of that? I'm sure I sent you one of those a long time ago.
Oh, probably a long time ago. It's lost in the mist of times. You want to send. By the way, don't forget to send me. Have you sent me a photo yet?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, okay.
This guy's on it.
He is.
MikeNowak.net.
There it is. There's the. Okay, and what's the photo of? I'm looking at it right now.
It's, that's Jeff's pumpkin.
Oh.
Sitting on a pallet, strapped in with some water still.
All right.
For the last second so it can suck it up.
Okay, well, I'm going to see what I can do to get this posted on Facebook before the end of the day. As a matter of fact, you know what I'm going to do? I'll just send it to Kathleen. That's the easiest thing. Oh, there it is. That's quite an interesting picture of that pumpkin. Okay, and you don't have any idea how to we don't know how to spell Jeff's last name, do we?
S-H-E-N-H-O-A. Chenoa.
All right, wait, let's get that again. So I've got it.
S-H-E-N-O-H-A.
Okay, Chenoa.
You got it.
All right, Jeff Chenoa. And I'm going to send that to Kathleen and have her post that on the Facebook page so people can see what the it looks like to have a competing pumpkin in the Great Pumpkin Way Off. So, all right, George, we will talk to you at the end of the hour.
All right, sounds good.
Take care, buddy.
All right, thanks.
Bye-bye. This is the Mike Novak Show, Pumpkin Central. Here,
this is awesome.
Yeah, live. You're not getting this, as Spike Odell used to say, you're not getting this kind of radio up and down the dial. That was one of the great quotes of his. All right, let's get a little more serious here. I'm going to go to the phones and bring in Karen Hudson. Karen, are you with me there?
I'm here.
You know, I wish everything could be as much fun as growing pumpkins. giant pumpkins. But, you know,
it was a really entertaining segment.
Well, it is.
Get a little more serious.
Yeah, we do have to get a little more serious. But, you know, that's what we do. On my show, it's from the ridiculous to the sublime.
Exactly.
And to the tragic.
Yeah.
As well, and that is what concentrated animal feeding operations are all about. Some people know them as CAFOs, and you, of course, work with Illinois Citizens for Clean Air and Water,
yeah.
and also the Socially Responsible Agricultural Product and Families Against Rural Messes. I like that one. That's a really good acronym. The farm, Families Against Rural Messes. But Karen and I have talked before because, well, you're an Illinois farmer.
Yes. Yes, and as he said, big pumpkins are here. We've got big factory farms here, more and more each year, and they're very underregulated. And as a result, our citizen health suffers, our property tax values suffer, and our surface waters and much more.
Well, is this a growing concern in Illinois and across the country, or have we gotten to the point where we're beginning to be able to regulate these farms?
It's a growing concern because they are becoming less regulated. We help citizens across Illinois and the country know the facts regarding regulations so they can have input to parties who can make rules. We are the experts in translating research about public health and water and in relation to the Clean Water Act and that type of thing. Because most people really don't know what this is when one moves into their neighborhood. So we're there to get them off to a running start on the issue.
Yeah, I was in doing my research on this, I found some interesting things that I was not aware of, and one of them is that the EPA regulates these factory farms based on size, which makes total sense, but it also means that you could have some smaller, and I'm using air quotes around the word smaller, CAFOs that might not be subject to as much regulation simply because they are smaller, but are indeed contributing to pollution anyway.
Correct. And what drives this point home is that we don't have an inventory for all of the animal feeding operations in the state of Illinois. In fact, I was called one night by a Region 5 EPA individual asking if Families Against Rural Messes knew where all the CAFOs were. And I said, well, I thought you were supposed to know that. And that's one of the biggest problems we have is an inventory, no inventory. How can you actually regulate an industry if EPA is not sure where all of these are? It's akin to a public health inspector being told to inspect all the restaurants in Cook County, but he doesn't have a list.
Karen, let me put it this way. That's outrageous.
Yes.
That we don't know where the CAFOs are and
yes.
That we don't have a comprehensive list of this. All right, I'm going to bring in a couple of other people to help us with the conversation. And one of them is Danielle Diamond. Danielle, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. Thanks for having us on today.
Danielle is the executive director for Socially Responsible Agricultural Product Project, rather, and also is an attorney, advocate, and organizer for Illinois Citizens for Clean Air and Water. Let's bring in another lawyer, and that's Michelle Merkel, who's the co-director of the Food and Water Justice Project. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for having me today.
My pleasure. And you used to work for the EPA.
I did, years ago.
Okay, correct me if I'm wrong. From what I understand, you were involved in looking at CAFOs and their impact across America. But when the Bush administration came in, that was sort of tamped down. Is that correct? What happened at that point?
Yeah, so CAFOs have been a national priority for EPA for some years, and so we had historically done some water regulation. I was in the EPA during the Clinton administration, but then it had come to our attention that there were serious air pollution concerns at these facilities as well. And so we had started some investigations of the air impacts, and in fact had brought a case with a group of citizens in Missouri against a large hog CAFO. And when the Bush administration came in office, we were told that we had to, you know, settle that case quickly or lose it, that I had to stop all of my other investigations. At that point, I was extremely frustrated and left the agency with Eric Schaefer, who was at the time the head of civil enforcement, had been there since Bush 1, and had confirmed that there had been this sort of unprecedented political interference with actions against CAFOs and some other sources of pollution. And so we left the agency at that time to start a nonprofit in D.C. to focus on those areas.
And that was the Environmental Integrity Project.
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
Now, that was then, this is now. Where does the Obama administration stand on enforcement of pollution laws and regulations?
Well, I'm extremely disappointed to say that he's not much better. We have the weakest Clean Water Act regulations on the books. I mean, they've been, CAFOs have been regulated since 1972. but we have the weakest regulations. They've been faced with some bad court decisions, but they haven't helped themselves. So as Karen mentioned, EPA itself has no idea what the universe of CAFOs is in the country. And so they estimate 20,000 CAFOs, but they don't really know. They came out with a regulation last year to create this inventory and just dropped it in this past July without any warning. In terms of air regulation, they've not done any air permitting or enforcement. Early in the administration, they actually published exemptions from certain reporting requirements under some of our federal statutes that require CAFOs to report to communities what they're putting out into the air. And so CAFOs, for example, emit a lot of ammonia. They're the number one ammonia emitters in the country. That causes respiratory illness. They emit pollutants like hydrogen sulfide, which causes neurological impairment. So the agency was sued over those exemptions. They acknowledged that there were some issues, took the rule back, and they've just been sitting on them. So they've been sitting on these rules for years. The exemptions are still in place. So our federal environmental laws have either been weakened under the administration or there's just been a wholesale lack of enforcement. It's sad. There had been some movement by the Justice Department that had looked good early in the administration, that they were assessing the impact of these major agricultural mergers approved in the past decade. And what I mean by that is that we've got tremendous consolidation in the industry. So there's basically four major companies in the country that control 83% of beef packing or 66% of pork packing, 58% of poultry processing. And so what this means with all this control is that the small farmers get squeezed out. They either go out of business or they're forced to contract with these big companies. They live at or below the poverty line. The big companies reap all the benefits. Huge implications for our food system. And the Department of Justice was looking at some of these mergers, held hearings across the country, and then again, just dropped completely off the radar screen. So it's been extremely frustrating because we had all hoped, of course, that there would be progress forward, not stagnation or progress back.
I have to ask a question about that, and you can answer it, or Danielle or Karen Hudson. Why would the Obama administration not be more progressive in this regard? And I guess, you know, I already know part of the answer, and, you know, it's big money, is big ag. Part of it is that the Obama administration hasn't been as progressive as a lot of progressives would like in total. But any other ideas about this? Any insight into why there has not been change and that perhaps it's actually gotten worse during the Obama administration?
I mean, as you mentioned, I mean, he was, you know, senator from Illinois before he became president. He was pretty moderate on CAFO issues back then. And there's been, you know, we have a horrible Congress in terms of its progressiveness and interest in regulating this industry. That doesn't help. And but the political capture, I think it's unbelievable how this industry has captured every level of government, whether it's local or state or federal. And we've seen that across the board, and it's no different in this administration, unfortunately.
Yeah. All right.
This is Karen.
Yes.
One of the things that goes along with what Michelle says is that this is agriculture. They claim that they're an agriculture, and they should not be regulated as an industry. And as these
farms, factory farms, has gotten larger and larger. They are not under the same type of, they emit more pollution. It's a whole different animal. And claiming that they're agriculture, they also claim to be exempt from certain rules that industry would have.
Okay. I want to go to Danielle Diamond and talk a little bit about there are folks listening that might not understand what the danger of these operations are. Perhaps you can address that a little bit. Michelle talked a little bit about some of the pollutants that come out of there. Of course, there's the whole humane issue of how we treat animals. What else do we need to be concerned about, Danielle?
Well, if you typically, livestock produce, on average, about 3 times as much waste as humans produce. So if you have a large-scale confinement operation that has a few thousand animals, you're looking at the amount of waste of a small city. And as Karen mentioned, you know, up until now, these facilities have sort of operated under the guise that they're agriculture, but in effect, they're huge industrial operations that produce massive amounts of waste that is untreated, and the facilities usually don't have enough land to dispose of the waste, and so what happens is the waste gets over-applied and ends up in our groundwater, in our streams, in our rivers, and then you have the whole air pollution issue that can impact neighbors up to 3 miles away in some cases, depending on the size of the facility. And so we don't have a handle on how to regulate these things. They should be regulated like other industrial production facilities, but right now they're not. And that's what we're hoping to get out of the current rulemaking that's before the Illinois Pollution Control Board, and through our efforts across the state, is to really bring to the attention of the public that these facilities are not farms in the typical sense. They're industrial facilities that need to be regulated as such.
All right, and you have been addressing the Illinois National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System, or NPDES, and it seems rather arcane for most people. They probably never heard of it, but it's a permit program that you say has failed to adequately regulate harmful pollutant discharges from CAFOs. Can you go into that a little bit?
Sure. So the National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System, or the NPDES permitting program, is a permitting program under the Clean Water Act. And these permits, or NPDES permits, are basically designed to control the amount of pollution that comes from these facilities. Under the Clean Water Act, if you're a polluter and you're a CAFO of a certain size, you should have an NPDES permit, and that essentially controls the amount of pollution that you're allowed to put out into the environment and the quantity and the type of pollutants. And in Illinois' case, we've been involved in this issue for quite some time and researched how the state of Illinois was implementing and enforcing the Clean Water Act, and found that the whole program had essentially fallen through the cracks. At the time when we started our research back in 2005, not a single CAFO in the state of Illinois had an active, up-to-date Clean Water Act permit, and this was despite the fact that there were many CAFOs that were known polluters. And so now we've been working for the past few years in trying to address this problem, because this is basically one of the only tools that we have to ensure these facilities are actually being operated in a way that protects our water. The state has taken steps to start issuing permits, and they're looking at other ways they can improve their program, and we're happy with that. But still, we have a problem because the agencies, both the Illinois EPA and the federal EPA, still don't know where a vast majority of the CAFOs are located in Illinois. By our research a few years ago, the state only knew where about 30% of the largest CAFOs were located. Now, the state has started to take steps to do an inventory, but we're very concerned that the inventory isn't going to provide us with enough robust information to really get a handle on the industry.
You know, I still can't wrap my brain around the idea that we don't know where the CAFOs are. For instance, on hold right now, and I'm going to get to him in a second, Dave, is it Lifeheit? Is that how you pronounce his last name?
That's correct.
Yes. Okay. Dave and his wife, Renee, in China, Illinois, had a CAFO land next to their farm. All right. Now they knew, and I'm going to talk to them about that in a second when we come back from our break. But they knew where it was. Isn't there some way that you can say, hey, if a CAFO is in your neighborhood, please report it? And here's where you put that down. I mean, that seems like a not quite as an efficient way of doing it, but it would be something. Have you tried anything like that?
Well, right now what we're pushing for is for the CAFOs to just let the agency know where they are. It seems
Why would they do that if they've been able to get away with it for so long? If I'm a CAFO and I set up shop, I don't want the government to know.
Well, we all have to register our cars, correct, to drive on the roads. You know, we have to, most other industrial facilities do have to apply for these.
Hey,
permits.
Most, in a lot of places, we don't even have to register guns, you know? You don't have to get a background check on that. So,
but, you know, one thing I should mention, though, is the Illinois Department of Agriculture, that's the agency that oversees the construction of new facilities. And so the Illinois Department of Agriculture has been administering the Livestock Management Facilities Act since the late 90s. And since the late 90s, the department has been permitting the construction of new facilities in Illinois communities. And so there is some information available through the Department of Ag on where these facilities are located, but there's some hold in that information because the act wasn't implemented until the late 90s. And, there are some loopholes there. So even the Illinois Department of Agriculture might not have an adequate accounting of how many facilities there are in Illinois. But I would mention that, you know, one of the big problems with that program is that, you know, these local communities where these new facilities are sited really don't have the ability to weigh in on whether or not a facility is built in their community. There is a process under the LMFA where county governments can weigh in on whether or not they want a CAFO sited in their area, but it's strictly an advisory, non-binding opinion. And so the Department of Agriculture can permit a facility to be built even against the wishes of the community. And so citizens really do have a limited ability to control where these facilities are sited.
Yeah, and believe me, I'm not beating up on you guys. I'm just saying it's just mind-boggling that
Can I jump in here quickly?
Go ahead. This is Michelle.
Yeah, you make a good point, Mike, about why would they report? And they aren't self-reporting. But the agencies have statutory authority to require reporting, which is what EPA has started to do and then pulled it back. What that means is if you fail to report after being ordered to do so, then you could face significant penalties, which is the incentive to do it in the first place, why we want the agencies to ask these operations to report. The other thing I wanted to mention as an example of political backlash is that just recently EPA Region 7, I think, was using aerial surveillance to monitor cattle ranchers to see whether they were in violation of clean water standards and other environmental regulations right from the air and try to get a handle on where these operations are. There was such a huge backlash from the cattle industry, and they went to their congressman that Senator Mike, I think it's Johans, from, he's a Republican from Nebraska, proposed an amendment to the Farm Bill this year that would have stopped EPA, prohibited them altogether to do aerial surveillance, which is outrageous, right?
Well, this is a short vote of passing. I talked to Karen about this earlier in the year, the ag gag bills. I mean, they're popping up all over the country.
They're popping up all over the country. I mean, this industry has enjoyed unprecedented sort of a lack of transparency and secrecy. And so even when the agency, like I said, has tried to use its tools. I mean, aerial surveillance is ridiculous that we need an amendment to prohibit it, right? I mean, we've got Google Earth. They should be able to air as public space. And yet even simple aerial surveillance on the behalf of EPA, we've got, you know, legislation in Congress proposing to prohibit it. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah. So I guess what it boils down to is our laws are not tough enough.
That's so correct, Mike.
You're right.
This is Danielle again.
Aren't being enforced.
Yeah. Danielle?
And that was just sort of the point I was trying to make with the, you know, the Department of Agriculture's Livestock Management Facilities Act. The laws have been written to favor the industry, and citizens have very little ability to ensure that their homes, the environment, and, you know, their farms are protected. And so it's just you know, there needs to be increased public involvement in the regulatory process. And right now the cards are stacked against Illinois citizens and citizens across the country because the industry has had a very favorable position in terms of writing regulations and laws.
Okay, listen, I want to get to Dave. He's been a very patient man, and he's got a great story to tell. Hang on, we're talking. That was Daniel Diamond, Executive Director of Socially Responsible Agricultural Product. Michelle Merkel is also on the line, who is with the Environmental Integrity Project. Karen Hudson, Illinois Citizens for Clean Air and Water. This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. If you're looking for a plant that will have your neighbors asking, where can I get one of those? Check out the Aramurus robustus. Yes, I'm speaking in Latin. Aramurus robustus, an elegant torch-shaped flowering plant that easily reaches 6 to 10 feet in height with a 3 to 4 foot flower spike, and it's hardy from zone 5 to zone 8. You might know it as foxtail lily or desert candle. The root of this plant is absolutely bizarre in appearance, a black spider-shaped tangle. They are weird, but they are also very fragile and should be planted immediately upon receipt. Building a cone of soil over which... Lower the cone of soil. The cone of soil over which to drape the spider is highly recommended. Once the flowering spikes reach a towering height of more than 6 feet, the tip fattens and ignites as the flowers at the bottom of the flower start to bloom. Over the next few weeks, the candle burns slowly as the blossoms continue to open up the spike. And finally, the tip of the Aramurus flower spike explodes in a final burst of color. Now that is a plant. That is something your neighbors will say, whoa, I want one of those. Tell you what, go right to Landreth Seed Co. on Facebook, Landreth Seed Co. Find the photo of the foxtail lily. Click on the links and order online right now. It's that simple. Or call 800-654-2407, 654-2407. D. Landreth Seed Company, purveyor of fine seeds since 1784.
Is pain keeping you from enjoying gardening? Dr. Bonnie Flaster at River North Wellness Center has gentle and effective techniques to get you out of pain and back to doing what you love. Here are two quick tips. First, remember to stretch. Second, use a timer to make sure you take breaks. Come see her at River North Wellness Center and find more tips at rivernorthwellness.com or call 312-642-7545 to make an appointment with Dr. Flaster and get back to feeling good.
In case you don't or you haven't been paying attention, summer ended about a week ago. Don't you hate it when you're the last to find out? I guess you need a subscription to Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. The September-October issue has a lot of information you need to set yourself up for fall and winter in Chicago. You might even want to compare your yard to some of the beautiful gardens featured in the magazine, like the garden near Wheatfield, Indiana, that is surrounded by thousands of acres of corn. Hopefully no CAFOs around there. On the other hand, it's a stunning piece of work, and you might not want to compare your own garden. Speaking of gardens, there's a list of glorious Midwest gardens from Missouri to Wisconsin to Michigan to Ohio to Pennsylvania and, of course, Illinois. And then there's my column on the inside back page. Not too glorious, but it gets the in-state discount. Whatever that means. Chicagoland Gardening Magazine on newsstands all over town, or get a subscription. Go to chicagolandgardening.com or call 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600. Yeah, the bittersweet symphony. That's when we're talking ag and talking CAFOs, it's mostly bitter. The Mike Novak Show and Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. On the line, I have Michelle Merkel and Danielle Diamond. Karen, I put you on hold for a second because I want to bring in Dave Lifeheit, and Denny's nodding in the studio because I'll probably kick somebody off the air if I put too many calls on at the same time. So let's go to Dave. Dave, you're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Mike. Good to be with you.
It's good to have you on, too. I was talking about your story. You are in Ogle County, correct?
That is correct.
And about 6 years ago, one of those concentrated animal feeding operations appeared kind of on your doorstep, didn't it?
Memorial Day weekend in 2006, we were advised by one of our neighbors that they intended to build a 4,800-head hog finishing cave hole approximately 2,400 feet from our house.
And
so we got a little bit alarmed.
I'll bet. What kind of recourse did they, you were informed by a neighbor? Didn't anybody come to you and say, hey, we're rezoning or we want to set this up? We wanted to give you a heads up. Nothing like that?
Well, I would have thought that the gentlemanly thing to do would be the farmer that's our neighbor would have come to us and say, this is what we're thinking of doing. But of course, that wasn't the case. No, our information came from the Illinois Department of Ag and intent to construct this facility so close to our house.
So it was basically a done deal, I assume. And when you say the gentlemanly thing that the farmer should have done, do you mean the farmer that sold the property?
No, he's actually the farmer that owns the facility along with his wife.
Ah, okay. So they brought in the company, and you found out from the Department of Ag. And then what happened?
Well, a few of our neighbors and ourselves, you can petition the Illinois Department of Ag to hold a public hearing. And, of course, there's a time limit that you can get procure enough signatures. I believe it's 125. We had 197 signatures in 3 days to hold this public hearing at the county level to get some more information. Basically, when they send you this intent to construct, it tells you where it's going to be and the size and who the owner is, and that's all you know.
And so was there a public hearing about this?
No, unfortunately, I made a typographical error on the description, and the county board chairman on her own decided that, well, there was a mistake on there, so they really didn't want to have a hearing.
Oh, dear.
And so we were denied our request for a hearing. We believe that there was some little politics going on behind the scenes there. So.
Yeah, you think, Dave? This is so appalling. This is the way, what is it about county boards and their ignorance and their lack of transparency? I mean, you look at what happened in LaSalle County when they approved the sand mine next to Starved Rock State Park. Yeah, you might as well put a CAFO in there, too. I don't know. Let's put a CAFO on the other side of the park. We got the sand mine now, and it seems to boil down to these county boards who ignore basically the will of the people for whatever reason, usually money, and not even giving you a hearing on it because of a typo. It's like in Michigan where they were going to throw out the referendum, the statewide referendum, because somebody apparently used the wrong font, the wrong size typeface. Go ahead, Dave.
Further to that point, the owner of the CAFO is our county clerk, and her father-in-law was on the board at that time.
Oh, Lord.
If I could butt in, this is Danielle Diamond. I just want to add that, a lot of county boards have actually asked the department not to allow construction of these facilities in their communities. So there is some politics that go on the local level, but some county boards have requested that the department deny construction permits, and those decisions were overridden by the Department of Ag.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear that, because my job is to rant and your job is to straighten me out when I do. So let's move forward. So you had the CAFO, Dave, put in next to you, 4,200 feet from your front door or something like that. And what was it like when the operation began?
Well, the operation had hogs brought in actually the last of November, first part of December in 2006. And it was shortly after that that my lovely home here that we built back in 1977 turned into a stink farm. It's just almost overwhelming on some days. It's very bad.
All right. And so you took recourse, and not by moving, but I would ask, you know, and it's your farm, obviously. You want to protect your home, and I understand that. If everybody moved out, then then the CAFOs win every time, it seems. But so you took this to the tax court. What happened there?
Well, in 2008, we educated ourselves, and thanks to our friends at ICCAW and, going on the Internet and trying to educate ourselves as much as possible, we found that these type of facilities do reduce the property values depending on the close proximity to the actual facility. We, being less or about a quarter of a mile away, decided that, you know, why not? I mean, what's fair is fair, and we wanted to make a statement and make the rest of the state aware that this is not a good thing. And we pay our property taxes on a regular basis, and we're good citizens here, and that's just not right. So we went ahead and filed an appeal at the county level, and were denied because I couldn't get an appraiser, again, the politics, to come out and make an appraisal on our property. So we appealed that and went to the state appeals board, and finally, after quite a few years, we had our hearing a couple months ago.
So it took, you started in 2008, and it took 4 years to just get a hearing?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And then what happened at the hearing?
Well, it became quite evident that the hearing officer was, told us that he had issues with both sides, but he would recommend a compromise, and we thought that was a good thing because perhaps we were going to win. We had asked originally for 33% reduction, and that's what the appraiser that we finally got to come out and make an appraisal after 3 years had assessed our home at. So he said, I'm going to get up and leave the room, which he did, and we negotiated with the county representatives there and came up with a 13% reduction in our property tax.
I think that's good that you came to an agreement, Dave. My gut reaction is that's a pittance compared to the distress that it has put your family through and you and your own operation there. Are you happy with the result?
Well, in my estimation, Mike, that's a victory for us because we could have gone into the hearing and, lost. Also, I should tell you that we are in a nuisance suit with the farmer, the owner of the CAFO.
Mm-hmm.
So we hope that we can use this as part of our evidence in the nuisance case. And furthermore, that we set this as an example to other people in the rest of the state that they can follow our lead and do likewise throughout the state. It's our feeling that we need to, make a loud statement here and try to, show them that there is a huge issue out there, and the local and the state government needs to sit up and take notice.
Yeah, I'm going to I've only got a couple more minutes here. Michelle and Danielle, is this a game changer in any way? This is that setting a precedent for lowering the tax value of a property. Is this going to be an effective way to fight CAFOs? Either one of you, step in.
Well, this is Danielle. I think this is one tool citizens have to get some type of, I guess you could say, something back from what they've been put through.
I think Dave's case does set a good precedent. I think more people need to be aware of this procedure that they can follow. There's no question that the properties near CAFOs are impacted. There's evidence out there to suggest that, you know, a lot of residents have a hard time even selling their homes once a CAFO comes in. Even the rumors that a CAFO might be coming in, people have a hard time selling their property. And so what happens is people become prisoners in their own homes. They have their retirement savings invested in their homes. It's, you know, they've lived in these homes for generations, and a CAFO moves in, they have severe impacts, and there's nothing they can do. They can't sell. They, you know, they have very limited options under the law to try to address the problems. And so I do think Dave's case is an important one. I should add that there's a nationally recognized expert in this area, and he has come up with a study that suggested that properties near CAFOs can decrease in value from 50 to 90%, depending on their proximity.
Are you talking about Dr. John A. Kilpatrick?
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah, I've got a link to his study on my website, MikeNovak.net. In fact, if you're looking for more information about any of this, I've got a lot of links there. Go to this week's show and the links to Illinois Citizens for Clean Air and Water and Social Responsible Agricultural Product, and the study that Dr. Kilpatrick did, which is CAFO Impact on Value of Proximate Properties. You know, again, some of it sounds arcane, but it's invaluable information for people who might come up against this sort of thing. I need to wrap it up, but Michelle and Danielle, I know you were talking about things this week in town with the EPA, but I also understand that there on the 13th of October is a chance for people to get involved. Can either one of you explain what that would be about?
So twice a year we have a statewide Illinois Citizens for Clean Air and Water Coalition meeting, and that's when we bring together all of our members from across the state that are being impacted by CAFOs. We have citizens in nearly 30 counties represented, and we bring in experts, and we educate people. And so that meeting is going on in Elmwood on October 13th, and if anyone's interested in getting involved, they can contact Karen Hudson or I, and we can give some more information about that. And the other thing I want to mention, too, is that there's a rulemaking currently going on before the Illinois Pollution Control Board. The Illinois EPA has proposed new regulations for CAFOs, and there's hearings taking place on that proposal between now and mid-November. And so that is a very good opportunity for the public to weigh in to the Pollution Control Board that we need stronger regulations for CAFOs in Illinois. And so that's going on between now and November 14th. And so if anyone wants to write the Pollution Control Board and let them know that, you know, you're interested in stronger regulations for CAFOs, particularly as they relate to clean water protections, it would be a good opportunity to do that.
And if they wanted to do that, where would they get the information about that? Should they go to Illinois Citizens for Clean Air and Water or someplace else?
I think if you go straight to the Illinois Pollution Control Board website, there's a link for current rulemakings. And if you scroll down half the page, there's the rulemaking for concentrated animal feeding operations. If you go to that link, there's instructions on how you can submit public comments to the board on this current rulemaking.
I'm going to try to, it's like too many steps. But so what I'm going to try to do is find that link and see if I can get that right up there so people can go right there, and I'll post it on my Facebook page and hope that helps. Michelle Merkel, thank you so much. Do you have any final words you'd like to say here?
Yeah, I mean, one thing I just want to mention why everybody should care. I mean, everyone should care about what's happening to Dave and his local community and Karen and other people who are facing the horrors face on from the CAFO industry. But we didn't get to talk about the public health impacts. It's about food safety, the foodborne illness associated with the way we're raising animals, the antibiotic resistance bacteria. And so whether you live in an urban area or a rural area, these CAFOs are impacting you. And so everyone, you know, there's an opportunity to join ICOF I call it the great way to start getting engaged, because ultimately our politicians answer to us. And so I think, you sending that link around is really important, but I just want to make the point that this affects urban communities as much as it affects rural communities as well in some ways because of the public health impacts.
Yeah.
So I thank you for doing this radio show in Chicago.
Oh, well, I appreciate that, but and believe me, I understand when I do all these various issues, there's never enough time to talk about everything about them. I do the best I can. And, you know, we'll talk about this again. Michelle Merkel and Danielle Diamond, I appreciate you being on. And Karen Hudson, who was on with us earlier. And Dave, Lifehite, I'm so sorry about your situation, but I'm glad you fought back and that at least you've gotten some satisfaction. And I hope things turn out all right for you.
Thank you, sir. I really appreciate the time spent.
All right.
Yes, thank you so much, Mike.
All right, you guys have a great Sunday. Yeah. We'll talk again, believe me.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Here's some more information from the Care of Trees and the USDA Forest Service about fall tree color. We talked about this earlier in the show. Certain colors are characteristic of particular species. Oaks turn red, brown, or russet. Hickories, golden bronze. Aspen and yellow poplar, they go golden yellow. Dogwood, purplish red. Beech, light tan. And sourwood and black tupelo, crimson. Maples differ species by species. Red maple turns brilliant scarlet, sugar maple orange red, and black maple glowing yellow. Striped maple becomes almost colorless. Kind of like me. Leaves of some species, such as the elms, simply shrivel up and fall, exhibiting little color other than drab brown. The timing of the color change also varies by species. Sourwood and southern forests can become vividly colorful in late summer, while all other species are still vigorously green. Oaks put on their colors long after other species have already shed their leaves. These differences in timing among species seem to be genetically inherited. For instance, a particular species at the same latitude will show the same coloration in the cool temperatures of high mountain elevations or at the same time as it does in warmer lowlands. Invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to look at your colorful trees. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees, their business is people and their love for trees.
Make this your best gardening season yet. Hi, I'm Melinda Myers, horticulturist and gardening expert. Invest a bit of time now to ensure a bountiful harvest and beautiful landscape throughout the season. And include Milorganite, eco-friendly, all-purpose fertilizer as part of your formula for success. Use Milorganite organic nitrogen fertilizer in all your planting beds. The low nitrogen, slow release formula makes Milorganite goof proof and good for the environment. So choose Milorganite for better results naturally. Visit Milorganite.com to find a store near you.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I publish the greenest magazine in Chicago. Natural Awakenings is packed with fresh information to help you lead a more healthful and sustainable life. Whether you practice yoga or work out, shop fair trade, are mindful of the food you eat and grow, or want a greener and more balanced life, Natural Awakenings is your go-to source for making informed decisions. In print or online, each month you'll find the latest news about what's healthy for our bodies, our families, and the earth, as well as a complete calendar of local events. And did I tell you that the magazine is free and available at locations across northern Chicagoland? Or find us online at nachicagonorth.com. If you're a green or wellness business in search of like-minded consumers, our readers are your potential customers. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings Magazine. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Ha ha. All right, let's go back out to George Janowick. How you doing, George?
Good, good. We just about got everyone here for the show.
We got about
another big
heavyweight contender here.
Literally. We're back out at the Great Pumpkin Way Off, and that is out at Benston's Pumpkin Farm in Homer Glen. There's still time to go. It's going to be at noon. Okay, we got about 2 minutes here. Who have you got for me, George?
Well, I got Jeff talking to possibly the next heavyweight. Ken Sweet from Michigan.
Ah, Ken cool. Sweet. Is yep. Can Ken get on the line for just a second?
Sure, here he is.
All right.
Hello.
Hey, Ken, how are you?
Not bad. How you doing?
All right. I don't know if I actually got that post up there. We had a photo of another pumpkin, but you're from Michigan. Where in Michigan are you from?
Squashington Township. It's like 45 minutes north of Detroit.
Because I am from Detroit, so that's
okay. Romeo area.
Oh yeah, I know where Romeo is. Okay, cool.
That's me. That's my town.
Well, what are you doing in Illinois at a pumpkin fest?
Well, they have $5,000 first prize, and I know a few of the guys over here. And
well, I guess I thought that you had to grow them in Illinois, but I guess you don't, huh?
I guess not. No. This is our third year coming. They kind of wanted to make this, you know, Chicago's that drives anywhere's got to drive through Chicago in the country. So figured it was a good spot to bring a lot of different states together.
All right. Well, I got about 30 seconds. How big do you think your pumpkin is?
1,500 pounds.
Really?
Yep.
You think you're going to break the state record?
Well, see, coming from Michigan, I don't know how that works. I think Illinois pumpkin has to be grown in Illinois.
Oh, that's true. You're just interested in the money, right?
Well, and the glory and everything else.
And the glory. The pumpkin glory. I love it.
Yeah, I got to have these people. Some of them will be, whatever you want to say, looking up to you, patting you on the back. And
yeah, well, I got to go, but good luck. And thank George for me, okay?
Okay.
We're out of here. Go green or go home.